We left off last time learning the beginning of Perek Yud Beis. We'll just review. So we'll begin with Malachim Beis, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Aleph. Ben Sheva Shanim Yehoash B'Malcho. We had mentioned that Yehoash was the child king, the child prince who became king at the age of 7 after being hidden. Mishnah Sheva LiYehu Melech Malach Yehoash. In the 7th year of Yehu, who was the king of the northern kingdom, that's when Yehoash began his reign as king. Barbam Shana Malach B'Yerushalayim. And for 40 years, Yehoash ruled in Yerushalayim. V'Shem Imo Tzivya Mi'Be'er Sheva. And the name of his mother was Tzivya from Be'er Sheva. And we have pointed out that she was a righteous woman, even though she was married to someone who was not righteous. She was married to Achaziyahu, who was the father of Yehoash, who was not righteous. Pasuk Gimel. Vayas Yehoash HaYashar Be'enei Hashem Kol Yomav. Yehoash did what was right and straight in the eyes of Hashem all of his days. Asher Horahu Yoyada HaKohen. That Yoyada HaKohen taught him. And we had mentioned last time, and we're going to see this play out tonight, that it really was only, unfortunately, during the lifetime of Yehoyada, who was the Kohen Gadol, who had kind of raised and was definitely involved in the raising of the small child while he was hidden, and became his mentor for life, but only his mentor until he passed away. But after Yehoyada passed away, that's when this pasuk kind of came to an end. And Yehoash is going, Vayas Yehoash HaYashar B'nei Hashem, that he followed the straight path in the eyes of Hashem, that only was during the lifetime of Yehoyada, but that came to an end when Yehoyada was no longer around. So the pasuk says Kol Yomav, but it's connected to Kol Yomav Asher Horahu. On the one hand, Kol Yomav is a pause, but it's, meaning, if that was the case, the pasuk would end there. Why it chose to formulate it this way, I can't 100%, it could have been a little clearer, perhaps. What's fascinating, and I don't necessarily know why, the Navi in Malachim is not really going to inform us of the sin. There's going to be one specific Avera that Divrei Hayamim is going to spell out, that we hinted to. And that sin is going to be something that is actually held in the mindset of Jewish history until today. We'll get to that point. Why the sin of Yehoash is not mentioned in Malachim, I don't know. It is only mentioned in Divrei Hayamim, and you might have thought it would be the opposite. You might have thought that the goal in the mindset, and we've discussed this numerous times, the goal in the mindset of Sefer Malachim is to actually tell the long and winding story that culminated in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the destruction of the country. While Divrei Hayamim was written by Ezra to kind of relate to those who came back to Eretz Yisrael and try to inspire them for tshuva, this story of Yehoash doesn't really end in anything inspirational. It's the exact opposite of inspiration. It starts out with Yehoash. We think he's going to be great, and we see what his life focus. He's about to put... The initial part of his adult life becomes a focus of refurbishing the Beis HaMikdash. The very beginning of his life, or at least his becoming king, wasn't necessarily his doing, but the people during his beginning tried to get rid of all of Avodah Zarah. Those were very positive things. You would say we might be turning the page and really heading towards something positive. Unfortunately, at the end of his life, it becomes negative. And the question is only going to be stronger when we present the full story of why is it that Malachim doesn't record that. So we'll have to see. We'll let each of us be the judge. The one negative of the beginning of his reign as king is brought down in Pasuk Dalet. This is, I guess, the first new Pasuk for us together. Rak habamos lo saru. He wasn't successful in removing the bamos. The bamos were the private altars, the private mizbechot that existed. Od ha'am mezabchim u'makachim babamos. The people were still offering sacrifices and incense on these altars. Now, what's important for us to understand is ha'am is only Yehuda and Binyamin and the Kohanim and Levim that lived in their land. The 10 tribes have seceded. The 10 tribes have been away for a long time. People still can't get rid of these bamos. And the Mefarshim point out that they were not worshipping Avodah Zarah at the time. At this time of Yoash, they were using these bamos to bring karbanos to Hashem, but every karban that they brought was Aser. Once the Beis HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim by Shlomo, it became Aser to offer a karban anywhere else in Eretz Yisrael forever. Ad HaYom HaZeh, until today. If you want to go and build a Mizbeach anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, it's Aser. You want to climb on top of Har Bayis and build a Mizbeach, it's probably Aser for Sakanas Nefashos purposes. But you're more, meaning that's the only place where a karban is allowed to be offered on top of Har Bayis. So what was this, you know, maybe a love affair that the people had with private mizbechos when they're bringing a karban to Hashem and they have access to Beis HaMikdash? It's in their portion. It's not even, you can't even argue that it's such a big trip. It's only the land of Yehuda and the land of Binyamin. That's it. No one's traveling all the way from, Metula in the north. Yeah, the people who lived in the north weren't allowed to go to Beis HaMikdash. I haven't seen so much talking about it, but it seems like it almost smells a lot of laziness. Of laziness, that it's much easier to worship Hashem in your backyard than to come to Beis HaMikdash. It's much more relaxed. You know, you could bring a karban, you know, in your pajamas as opposed to getting dressed and going out to the Beis HaMikdash. This same idea, this is a terrible habit that the people seem to be addicted to. Because one of his ancestors, one of Yoash's ancestors, I believe it was Baasha. Maybe it was even Yehoshaphat also. There's two other kings were successful in cleaning up the land of Avodah Zarah. King Asa was able to go ahead and get rid of the Asherah. I'm paraphrasing now from Terek Tesvav. You read pasuk Dalet. I'm going to read you a pasuk from back in Malachim Aleph, Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Yud Dalet. This is talking about his ancestor Asa. The habamos lo saru. The bamos he wasn't able to remove. So that's his ancestor Asa. And then again, in Malachim Aleph, Perek Chaf Beis, this is now, Perek Chaf Beis is during the time of Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat was this boy's grandfather. Yehoshaphat also was able to lead the people in a very proper way. I'll read the pasuk here, coming from Perek Chaf Beis, pasuk Mem Dalet, and you follow in our pasuk. Ach habamos lo saru, od ha'am mizabchim u'mekatrim b'bamos. It's almost word for word. And so this is, it's a nasty habit that Klal Yisrael seems to be addicted to. And when I say Klal Yisrael, I mean the people of Yehuda and Binyamin. That king after king is able to, quote unquote, rid the land of Avodah Zarah. They can't get the people off this need to have the private mizbechos. And it's hard for us to understand why that was. Perhaps it's because we don't really know what it means to have karbanos and experience what it means to bring a karban. And maybe the religious emotional feeling that you feel when you bring a karban, so if you could get that every day in your backyard or in your neighborhood, you might want to have it all the time when you'll only get to Beis HaMikdash three times a year. So that in a way that's Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, the words of Avodah Zarah mean a strange worship. When you start worshiping God the way you want, as opposed to the way He wants, that's Avodah Zarah. It might not be bowing down to an idol, but it's when you formulate halacha the way you want, as opposed to the way halacha wants, subjective as opposed to objective, it's not proper. And the Navi records it that he was successful, but he couldn't get rid of these bamos, and he seems to, in that regard, falls into good company with the ancestors Yehoshaphat and Asa. We don't hear how many years pass from stage to stage. This statement of Rak HaBamos Lo Saru, it sounds like that applied for his entire life. That he went in the ways of Hashem. The only thing that was wrong is he didn't remove the bamos. You have to imagine that he wasn't held responsible at age 7 for not removing the bamos. This seems to be more of a life theme that he was never successful in removing the bamos.
Did he try? I don't know.
Perhaps not. We're not necessarily sure if he tried or not. It says he wasn't successful. And apparently that was the measure of success, is it, trying wasn't enough, perhaps. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. We're not told. The next thing that Yehoash does seems to be something of his own decision. So if he's making his own decision, he has to be of a certain age. By doing the math, we're told that in the next paragraph, we're told about his son, Amatziahu, that Amatziahu became king when he was 25 years old. So if you do the math, we know that Yehoash was 7 when he became king and he lived for 40 years. So he was 47 when he died. So Amatziahu was 25 when he became king. That means he was born when Yehoash was 22 years old. So at 22 years old, he was already a father. Is that his oldest son? I don't know if we know that, and we don't know when he got married. We're told in Divrei Yamim that he got married to two wives specifically, but we don't know. We're not giving a timeline. The next stage, it has to happen when he's of a mental capacity that he could formulate an idea. So he's not 7. How old he is, we're not sure. We are told that basically there are two steps. The second step, we're told it's his 23rd year of being king at step 2. So that means he was 30 years old. So this step 1 is happening sometimes between age 7 and age 30, but it has to be when he is at least of age to think. So again, it could be a teenager, it could be in his 20s. You could view it as a short amount of time before this step 2, which you'll see. If you're a little unclear, you'll get there. Don't worry. Pasuk Hey. Vayomer Yoash el haKohanim. Yoash said to the Kohanim, Kol kesef hakadoshim, asher yuva beis Hashem, all the sanctified silver that is brought, that comes to the house of Hashem, that comes to the Beis HaMikdash, kesef over, the money of those who pass, ish kesef nafshos erko, the value of someone's life, kol kesef, all this money, asher yala aleva ish, that comes upon a person's heart, lahavi beis Hashem, to come to the Beis Hashem. We'll read one more pasuk and then explain. Yikhu lohem hakohanim, the Kohanim should take these monies. Ish me eis makaro, each man, meaning each Kohen from those who he recognizes. Veheim, and they, the Kohanim, yichazku es bedek habayis, will strengthen the needs, the fixing that which is broken in the Beis HaMikdash. L'chol asher yimatzei sham badek, anywhere where they find something that needs a repair, they will fix. The overall theme of what Yehoash is trying to accomplish is a restoration of the Beis HaMikdash. What happened to the Beis HaMikdash that it needed a restoration? So the commentators point out that Shlomo HaMelech's Beis HaMikdash was so magnificent that had nothing else happened, it was built with the quality to last. The psukim here don't inform us of everything. And so if you take a look at your Divrei Hayamim sheet, in the Divrei Hayamim sheet, if you turn, this is in Divrei Hayamim Beis, Perek Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Zion. It's almost like this pasuk is in parentheses, and the pasuk is telling us the state of affairs that existed. The pasuk says, Ki Asal Yahu, Hamir Shas, the wicked Asal Yahu, who was the queen, this boy, Yoash, is this young man, Yoash, his grandmother, Ki Asal Yahu, Hamir Shas, this wicked woman, Baneha, her sons, she and her sons, Hartzu es beis ha'alokim had caused a breach in the house of God, in the Beis HaMikdash. The gam kol kodshe beis Hashem, and a lot, many of the sanctified items in the Beis HaMikdash, asu laba'alim, they made used for the Avodah Zarah Baal. Now the question that you would ask on this pasuk is, we know that she killed all of her other sons and grandsons, and she was trying to make sure she would have no competition. So the Radak points out, I believe, that it could be she had another husband, and she had either, most probably before she, because she was only queen for 6 years, she had another husband before she married Yehoram, and so she had other sons who, since they came from another husband, were not fit. They're not fit to take over the monarchy, so technically they were saved. She didn't take out her desire for power by taking their lives, and they joined her in what the pasuk here in Divrei Hayamim is describing as a desecration of the Beis HaMikdash, and also desecrating many of the items of the Beis HaMikdash. And so there was cause, much like you would say, much like there was cause for the story of Hanukkah to rededicate the Beis HaMikdash, to have a Hanukkah Samizbeach, to rededicate because the Yevanim defiled the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash that Yehoash inherits under his monarchy is a Beis HaMikdash that is lacking, and he takes it upon himself. And there's actually a beautiful, I think a more beautiful language. If you take, and that same Divrei Hayamim sheet, Pasuk Dalet, turn back just a couple of psukim. Divrei Hayamim Chav Dalet, Pasuk Dalet. Vayihi achari chein. It was after this, which the pasuk, I'll go back a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. I mean, we don't know how old he was, but it says Vayisalo Yoyada Pasuk Gimel. It says he married Nashim Shtayim. He married two wives. Vayolid Banu Muvanos. He had children. So it's sometimes after he married and had children. Vayachari chein. It was after that, presumably sometime in his 20s. Haya im leiv Yoash. It was with the leiv of Yoash, lechadesh es beis Hashem. He wanted to make new, he wanted to restore the house of Hashem. That he had a heart. And you know, you could maybe step back and say, it makes good sense why Yoash wants to beautify and restore the Beis HaMikdash. Why? That was his safe haven. The safe haven for his 6 years of life. You know, so as a six-year-old, it's very hard to appreciate. But as a 20-year-old, you step back, and if it wasn't for Beis HaMikdash, his grandmother might have killed him. The one place she never thought to look was Beis HaMikdash. And so the Hakaras HaTov, and this is fascinating, because while at this stage of his life, perhaps he has proper Hakaras HaTov, unfortunately, he's going to lose that Midah. We'll see that. So, but what it most probably is an idea of Hakaras HaTov to the structure, to the Beis HaMikdash. And it pains him, the state that the Beis HaMikdash is in, and so he takes it upon himself to refurbish the Beis HaMikdash. And the people of Yehuda, even though the people of Yehuda had these private mizbechos, there still is the carbon tzibur. There still is the carbon tamid that's brought every morning and every afternoon on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. And you know, you have to imagine that there were some righteous individuals that came to brought karbanos. And the truth is, right now it sounds very personal. It could very well be that I could take your question to the extreme. It could very well be that Beis HaMikdash is not so active right now. But for Yoash, it's personal. And so he wants to see the Beis HaMikdash restored regardless of how many people are coming there. Well, we'll see something that maybe sounds, let's see. Let's wait. So there's going to be two plans to raise the money. Plan number one is asking the Kohanim to raise the money, collect the money, keep the money under their own control, and take care of all the things that need to get fixed with the money that they raised. Where were they raising money from? So there seem to be a number of possibilities. The Pasuk mentions many different forms of kesef, mentions the word kesef many times, Pasuk Hey, back in Malachim. And we need to break down what are the different forms of money that they were collecting. So the first is, it says, Kol kesef ha-kadashim, all the sanctified money, asher yuva beis Hashem. Kesef over. What's kesef over? Kesef over refers to what the Pasuk says. Pasuk says in Parshas Kisisa, Kol ha-over ala pekudim. When we're introduced to the concept of the machzis ha-shekel, the half shekel coin that had to be given annually, uses the pasuk in Sefer Shemos uses the term over. So here the phrase kesef over, the money of those who pass through, that's the Radak and Rashi are saying that's a reference to the machzis ha-shekel, the half shekel that had to be given by individuals annually. So this is the first. Now, what was the purpose of this machzis ha-shekel? So the machzis ha-shekel was actually there to pay for the karbanot tzibur. If every single day in the Beis HaMikdash there's a karban offered in the morning and a karban offered in the afternoon, and that karban is being offered on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael, so how is that karban being offered on my behalf? Well, the answer is that on Aleph Adar, they would go out and start collecting and spend the month going around collecting a half shekel. And that half shekel was used for the next coming year, starting Aleph Nisan till the next Aleph Nisan, to pay for the carbon in the morning, the carbon in the afternoon. So a little bit, I contributed a little share to the karbanei tzibur, to the karbanos of the community. So the Radak is wondering, if the first group of funds that is going to be taken to help refurbish the Beis HaMikdash, so where is there going to be the money for the karbanei tzibur? So one answer is maybe a little bit what Mrs. Press was mentioning. One answer he thinks is that maybe during those 6 years that Asaliyah was the queen, people didn't want to give money. So people weren't giving their machzis ha-shekel. So there was kind of back pay, back machzis ha-shekel, back taxes, going back. I mean, why didn't people want to give? Maybe they didn't want to give because they didn't trust her. They figured that she was just going to, you know, use it for inappropriate things. Or it was that during her rule that she was so successful in convincing people to worship Avodah Zarah that people just weren't contributing to that. They were spending their funds not on Avodah Hashem. So there might have been this back taxes, and that was coming from there. The Abarbanel kind of thought maybe it was, you know, Lahavdil. They have these, it's very popular around like fundraising programs. They have matching funds, right? They tell you that if you give, we have this donor that will give. For every dollar you give, that donor will give. Which, you know, part of you is always asking, if the person's so willing to give, then just let him give. And then, but it's all marketing. It's an incentive. So the Abarbanel explains that there must have been some private donor that agreed, you know what, I'll take care of the Karbanei Tzibur, I'll put up the funds for that. Use this money, this Machzis HaShekel money, and maybe even the extra Machzis HaShekel money, use that to go towards the refurbishing of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the first source of money. That's the first of the individual phrases of Kesef. Continuing in the Pasuk, Kesef Nafshos Erko. There's a parsha in the Torah, a topic in the Torah called Erchin. Erchin means valuations. The Torah tells us that each person has an erech value. There are different ways that if a person wants to give themselves, a person wants to give the money that they're worth to the Beis HaMikdash as a gift, so there are two ways that one could do that. There used to be something called the slave market, where everyone has a worth. And so a 30-year-old male had a certain worth, a 30-year-old female had a certain worth, and depending on not just age, if the person was very strong, they were worth a lot more because most of the labor was manual labor. If someone was able to advertise on the slave market that they had skills, they were an expert seamstress, so they'll be worth a lot more. Then the Torah has a separate aspect called, everyone has, it's kind of like category valuations called erichin, where a child is worth a certain much, and that's all children. An adult male is worth a certain much, and that's all adult male. Adult female is worth all a certain much. So you could say, I want to give my erich value to the Beis HaMikdash, and let's say you looked it up, and your erich value is 30 shekel, so then you would be obligated to now give 30 shekel to the Beis HaMikdash. So this second phrase of kesef, nafshos erko, has the language of erchin. So that's the second. So these donations taking place from now and on would be diverted to the Kohanim to use for fixing the Beis HaMikdash. And the third is called kesef asher yala alev ish. Donations, voluntary gifts, right? A person had a good season raising crops or raising animals, and they just want to give an extra gift, an extra donation to Beis HaMikdash. You know, we make the appeal. They didn't have any shuls back then. There were no shuls. So the appeal, the Kol Nidre appeal, it probably wasn't Kol Nidre, but the appeal was for Beis HaMikdash. So a person feels like giving, they're not going to give to their shul, they're not going to give, there was no Amit even, I know we love Amit, but there was no Amit yet, and so they gave to Beis HaMikdash. So that's the third. Now it happens to be in Divrei Hayamim makes it sound like, if you take a look back at the Divrei Hayamim sheet, as I said, we're kind of going back and forth. So in Pasuk Hey, in Divrei Hayamim, it mentions something that's not mentioned here. Pasuk Hey in Divrei Hayamim says, Vayikbots es ha-kohanim v'ha-levim. He gathered the Kohanim and the Levim. In Malachim, we had only mentioned Kohanim. Here he's including in Divrei Hayamim, it says the Levim were also involved. Vayomer lohem, and he said to them, Tzi'u la'are Yehuda. Go out to the cities of Judah. V'kivtzu mikol Yisrael kesef, and collect, gather from all of Israel money, l'chazek et beit elokeichem, to strengthen the house of your God, midei shana b'shana, from year to year, v'atem temaharu l'davar, you should hurry up and do that, v'lo mi'aru l'avim. But the Levim did not, they didn't hurry up. But the Nakuda at this point that I'm bringing up is that it seems to be there was a fourth collection aspect in Divrei Hayamim, that you had to go door to door. A fundraising where, you know, the first mushlachim, the first schnars that knocked on doors were the ones, or at least supposed to be the ones that Yoash sent out, according to what it says in Divrei Hayamim. So this is all the ways of collecting the money with the purpose of fixing the Beis HaMikdash. But as Pasuk Vav mentions, Yikhu, I'll read it again. Pasuk Vav, we're now back in Malachim. Sorry for the confusion. Yikhu lohem hakohanim, the Kohanim will take the money. They're going to have the money in their own, seemingly it sounds like it's in their own personal possession. Ish me eis makaro, each man from who he recognizes. And the truth of the matter is, this might be a hint to what it was saying in Divrei Hayamim, that, you know, who, right, who's the first person that you ask? So it's usually the people that you know, like Lahavdil, when my kids have every year in the camp, they have like the swimathon to raise money for Chai Lifeline. So who do they call? They're not sitting there with the yellow pages. They call the people that they call the people that they know to ask to sponsor, you know, the bike-a-thon, the swimathon, one of these things. So ish me eis makaro, that the Kohanim initially they were kind of charged with, the first people you should hit up for money are those who you know. The heim and they yichazku es bedek habayis. Now they had to be the ones, right? The Kohanim had to be the ones to call the plumber, to call the craftsman, to call the architect, and then take care of paying them and doing everything kind of unsupervised. And this system failed. The system failed. Now you might say it was doomed for failure because it seems to be a little too free. It's not very defined. It's like, oh, go collect money and fix things. Pasuk Zion picks up after this phase one had failed. Vayhi b'shnas esrim v'shalosh shana l'melech Yoash. It was the 23rd year of King Yoash, which means he's 30 years old. Lo chizku akohanim esbedek abayis. And the kohanim had not repaired the deterioration of the Beis HaMikdash. They had not fulfilled. And the question is maybe why? So the Radak seems to think that the Kohanim were nervous. They were nervous that the cost of the repair would be more than that which they collected, right? When I take a trip in school, so I take a trip, and a lot of times let's say it doesn't happen so often, but I might put the bill on my credit card, and the school is offering to pay for the trip, but it just didn't work out, so I have to fill out my receipts. They actually now have businesses have this all the time. I'm just not involved in business. They actually made an app where you take a picture of your receipt, and it gets registered in that app, so even if you lose your receipts, you still get reimbursed by your company. So the Kohanim were going to get reimbursed. They were nervous that if the plumber or the architect costs way too much, they're going to have to take money out of their own pockets. So the Radak says they were being patient. They were being too patient for at least Yoash's. Yoash's thinking is was taking way too long. Pasuk Ches, Vayikra Hamelach Yoash LeYada HaKohen LaKohanim. So Yoash the Melech, he calls Yoyada, who's the Kohen Gadol, Yoyada HaKohen, the Kohen, because he's the Kohen Gadol, LaKohanim and the other Kohanim. Vayomer Aleihem, and he says to them, Madua Einchem Mechazkim Esbed HaKabayis. He is challenging them. Why are you not repairing the deterioration of the house of Hashem? The Ata, and now he's about to shift. He's going to shift to phase two. What's phase two? Phase two is the Ata, and now Al tikhu kesef me'eis makarehem. Don't take the money from those who you recognize. Ki lebedek habayis titnuhu. You're going to give it to the bedek habayis, which here is a reference to some type of fund. We're going to see what was created, but basically it sounds like almost the first tzedakah box is about to be created. Titnuhu, that's where you're going to place it. You Kohanim are no longer going to be in control of holding the money. But rather, the money is going to be in a centrally located location. Pasuk Tes. Vayeosu haKohanim. The Kohanim agreed. The word Vayeosu is an interesting word, and it's hinting to us that the king was not necessarily demanding. Because if the king demands something, you don't have to agree. You can agree or not. It doesn't really make a difference whether you agree or not. Pasuk saying, Vayosu HaKohanim, they agreed. It sounds like maybe they came to a meeting of the minds in a way. And maybe the Kohanim, you know, hopefully there was some form of conversation. We're never told everything that happens. But the system wasn't working. And so it could be that not only was Yoash recognizing that the system wasn't working, but the Kohanim themselves were recognizing the system wasn't working. And so they agreed to this new system. The language of Vayeosu, so the Mitzvah Sion tells us it's used elsewhere in Tanakh. We'll see who knows this phrase. Bezos naos lachem. Bezos naos lachem. Parshas Vayishlach. I didn't know it either. Don't worry. With this, we will acquiesce to you. This is Shimon and Levi speaking. When Shimon and Levi were making the fake deal with Shechem and Hamor, so they made this deal that if you go ahead and have your bismillah, then, right, they wanted to be able to have intermarriage. So Shimon and Levi came up with the idea of bismillah and said, Bezos, you do that? Naos lachem, will acquiesce to you and we'll allow for this intermarriage. We all know what happens. They do the bris milah and then Shimon and Levi take the rest. So that's the language, vayosu. Vayosu kohanim, the kohanim agreed. Levilti kachas kesef me'es ha'am. They agreed not to accept the money from the people, meaning not to take it as theirs. They still were going to be involved to some degree in collecting, but not in retaining the funds. Ulavilti chazek esbedek habayis, and not the person, they were not going to be the personally the ones taking care of the arrangements for the fixing of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's kind of like the areas where the most responsibility was needed, they were not going to be a part of, which is considered to be an enhancement. And this phase two actually does work, because it was only a select few who were chosen to be involved in actually working with the collected funds after they were put in that central location, which we'll read in a moment. And there was a select few that were selected to be the ones who called the carpenters, who got them, who bought the raw materials, who did all the, you know, what we would maybe call the logistics. It makes good sense that if they no longer have the funds themselves, so they don't have to have the responsibility of taking care of all the details of the fixing. It's pasuk yud. Vayikach Yoyada HaKohen Aron Echad. Yoyada, the Kohen Gadol, took one Aron, one box, one large, you know, container. Vayikov Chor Bidalto. And he bore a hole into the door. This hole, the Mefarshim say, was made to be narrow enough that money should go in, but not come out. Vayitin also ate al mizbeach, and was placed next to the mizbeach, miyamin, from the right side. Bevo ish beis Hashem, when a person would be coming into the Beis HaMikdash. V'nosnu shama ha-kohanim shomrei hasaf. The kohanim were there. They were kohanim who were kind of guardians of hasaf, can refer to the threshold, which might refer to the gates, the gatekeepers of the Beis HaMikdash. Es kol ha-kesef ha-muva Beis Hashem. And so it was their job, any money that was brought into the Beis Hashem, as the next pasuk says, "Vayihi kerosam kirav hakesef ba'aron," meaning it was their job to put the money into the aron, into this container. Pasuk Yud Aleph is "Vayihi kerosam kirav hakesef ba'aron." When they saw that the kesef was full, "Vayihi," Rashi says, we learn out that it was every day they checked, miyom el yom, they checked to see was the container full, and if the container was full, so then "Vayal sofer hamelech." A king, the scribe of the king would come, v'ha kohen gadol, and the kohen gadol, v'yatsuru, and they would gather it, they would put it into the bags, or to the sacks, v'yimnu, and they would count the sakes ha'vinim sabesh Hashem, they would count the money. Perhaps, I don't know, but perhaps this is one of the first psukim that sing the praise of checks and balances. That you have the scribe coming from the king, so that's one division of power. Then you also have the Kohen Gadol, which is a different division of power. And so you have them both there as a form, you know, as a form of checks and balances to first of all, the idea is mentioned that tzedakah funds in general, and it actually comes from these psukim, the hint is that tzedakah funds are supposed to have two people involved. The idea being that hopefully two people will provide the checks and balances that if, God forbid, you know, one of them is not being honest, the other will be there to keep that person in check. Obviously, you could always have a case where people are in cahoots, but usually also the people chosen are to run the tzedakah fund in the community are usually the people that are well-respected, and you're hopeful that you're choosing the right person. So here was the Sofer HaMelech, who the Melech, I imagine, chose single-handedly, Vakohen Gadol. And the Kohen Gadol, who was an extremely righteous individual, right? If it was the Kohen Gadol who was the only one in the entire country who had the guts to stand up to the queen and lead the rebellion, to put a proper king, a proper son of the house of David, back onto the throne. So if you take a look back in your Divrei Hayamim, so in Divrei Hayamim in Pasuk Ches, Pasuk says, "Vayomra Melech, Vayasu Aron Echad." The Melech said, "They made an Aron,
Vayetnuhu bishar beis Hashem chutzah. And they put it outside of the gate of the Beis HaMikdash, which sounds like it's in a different location from where we described. So the Talmud Yerushalmi talks about this contradiction, and there are two possible ways out of the contradiction. One is that it was moved from one location to the next, that it was originally inside the Beis HaMikdash, but it was moved outside. One of the reasons why you would want it to be put outside is because if someone was Tameh and wasn't able to come into Beis HaMikdash, they still would be able to make a donation. The other approach is that maybe they're actually two collections, that they made one inside the Beis HaMikdash and one outside the Beis HaMikdash. Just echoing the point we mentioned before, when it said in Pasuk Yud, it said at the end of the Pasuk, V'nasnu shama ha-kohanim, that the Kohanim are involved. It's Kohanim, it's putting a focus on the plural. So that's, the Ralbag wanted to point out that that's another one of the hints, that it has to be at least two people involved. That when you're dealing with the tzedakah, it has to be two people involved. Pasuk Yud Beis. So now that they would collect the money, what would they do with the money? V'nosnu es ha-kesef ha-mesukan. They would take the kesef ha-mesukan. Ha-mesukan is also a not-such-used phrase. The Mitzvah Sion and Rashi tells us it means lashon minyan, counting. So here, this might be a little easier to guess. Where does this pasuk come from? V'sochen levenim titenu. When I translate it, you'll all know. A quota of bricks they will have to give. So in the beginning of Shemos, when in the Shibud of Mitzrayim, so when at one point the raw materials, the straw was taken away from them, but the Egyptians put the stress, you'll still have to have that same quota of bricks. And the word for quota is sochen. So that's Rashi brings down here, that the word sochan, hamisukan, means counted. So v'nosnu es ha-kesef hamisukan, the counted money, they would give the counted money al yidei osei ha-malacha, into those who handled the work. So it sounds like it's still Yoyada, the Kohen Gadol, and the Sofer HaMelech. After they counted, it was their job, specifically their job, these are extremely trusted individuals, to go ahead and hire the workers. Who were appointed, right? The workers who were appointed in the Beis HaMikdash. Vayotzi uhu lachar sheha'etz. And they paid out the money to the woodcutters, v'labonim, and to the builders, ha'osim beis Hashem, who were working on the Beis HaMikdash restoration project, pasuk yud gimel. V'lagodrim, and to the masons, v'lachotz v'ya'even, and those who cut the stone, the liknos eitzim, and those who buy the wood, the avne machtsev, and certain quarried stones, lachazek esbedek habayis, esbedek beis Hashem, to go ahead and strengthen the aspects that were broken in the house of Hashem. What's interesting is that bedek habayis becomes known as the phrase that's used for upkeep. Upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash is used as bedek habayis, but bedek actually refers to the things that are broken. And then their job is that after something's broken, you fix it. But we call it bedek habayis. It's actually one of the things you could, when you made a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, you would make a donation to one of the options would be bedek habayis, where that money is not going to be used for karbanos at all. It's going to be used for bedek habayis, for the upkeep. And ad hayom hazeh, you'll see sometimes certain shuls will have, like kind of on the tzedakah box, will have the phrase bedek habayis. Which means it's going for the upkeep when the lights break, when the kabayis is, you know, different shuls have different concerns. So the ulachol asher yetze al habayis lechazka, everything that was being done to go ahead and repair it. Pasuk yadalid, ach, but lo ye'ase beis Hashem, sipos kesef mizamros. Mizrakos, Chatzotzros. What was not done for the Beis HaMikdash was some type of silver musical instrument, or basins, trumpets, kol klizav v'kli chesef, all utensils of gold and silver, min hakesef amuva beis Hashem, from this money that was brought in. Why? Pasuk tes vav. Ki lo'osei hamalacha yitnuhu, because all the money went for the workers. V'chizku bas beis Hashem. Which makes it sound, this makes it sound like all the money raised had to, this project of restoring the Beis HaMikdash was so great that there was nothing extra. What's the problem? The problem is, if you come back to your Divrei HaYamim sheet, and you go to the last Pasuk on page 1, which is Pasuk Yudalid, read with me, Uchechalosam, when they finished, Heviu lifnei hamelech the Yoyada es shara kesef. They brought toward the king and to Yoyada the extra money. Vayasu kchelim leveis Hashem klei shares. So they made utensils. Valos, vekapos, uchleizah, vechesev. They went ahead and did that. Vayu ma'alim olos beveis Hashem tamid kol yimei Yoyada. They brought offerings all the days of Yoyada. But the idea, so it sounds, it's a little bit of a contradiction between the psukim. So how do we explain that? So the Radak explains why does our pasuk say specifically that it wasn't used to make vessels when the pasuk in Divrei HaYamim says they used it specifically because to highlight to us the priority. Priority number one was physical plant, the structure, taking care of the walls, the floors, the ceilings, taking care of the physical structure of the Beis HaMikdash. That was priority number one. Then, like Divrei HaYamim says, after that was all said and done, they could take the leftover money and use it for extra things like vessels, instruments, and things of that nature. But that priority number one was taking care of the physical plant, the physical structure of Beis HaMikdash. Pasuk Tazayin, which is a little bit of a shocking pasuk, after the failure of phase one, you might have thought that part of phase two would be a type of auditing, where they would audit to make sure, like the IRS, to make sure that everything's going, you know, kedasu gedin properly. But that didn't happen. Pasuk Tazayin tells us the opposite. V'lo yechashvu es ha'anashim. They did not make an accounting of the men, asher yitnu es ha'kesef al yadam, that the money went through them, laseis la'osei ha'malacha, to perform the malacha, ki ve'emuna him osim. They acted with emuna, they acted with faithfully. Now, we saw who the individuals were. The individuals that we know of is Yoyada Kohen Gadol, and this person who's described as Sofer HaMelech, who the king must have selected from amongst his advisors, his cabinet. So there was probably a proper individual. Now the other reason, practically, why maybe there was no checking of them is because it has to be, because we don't hear otherwise, the system worked. It worked. And when it worked, when things work, you're not always nervous about checking things. As long as everything's working, so then naturally you're more comfortable with the situation. It happens to be that we learn out from here that because the community goes out of its way to select the most proper individuals for the tzedakah fund, you don't have to check up on them. Halachically, you don't have to, and this is kind of used as a, not as a proof, but as a type of support, that because you trust them so much, so therefore you don't have to check them. But again, that's only with the condition that you chose the proper people to begin with. If for some reason you didn't do that, so then obviously that wouldn't apply. Pasuk Yud Zayin is really the last pasuk on this section. Kesef Asham, the Kesef Chataos, lo yuva beis Hashem, la kohanim yu. Kesef asham, the money, I'm going to translate very literally in the beginning. Kesef asham, the money from a karban asham, a guilt offering. The kesef chatas, and the money from a chatas offering. Lo yuva beis Hashem, was not brought to the Beis Hashem, la kohanim yu, it was for the kohanim, which on the simple level of interpretation, there's no way to walk away with this. It's a, if you understand it just literally, so it's very bad. But that's, so the Torah Shabbat Peh tells us not to understand this pasuk literally. Obviously, the money, if someone brought money for an asham, a carbon asham was brought. And if someone brought money for a carbon chatas was brought. This was not a time where the Kohanim were taking advantage of the people. Unfortunately, there were times in Jewish history where the Kohanim took advantage of the people. We learned about that way, way back when, the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, that in Shiloh, it was Eli's two sons, Chafni and Pinchas, that were up to no good in terms of taking advantage of the people in the realm of Karbanos. So how do we explain this here? So the Gemara, which is the Gemara Yerushalmi, there is no Talmud Bavli on Maseches Shkalim. Maseches Shkalim, like the name, deals with the concept, the idea of the Machzitz HaShekel. So why is there no Talmud Bavli? So the Talmud Bavli mainly was written in Bavel, it was written in Babylonia in the years between, let's say, 250 and 500 of the Common Era. So if we're in 2015, it was written year 250 to 500 in Bavel. What they discuss in Bavel, Beis HaMikdash was long destroyed. Eretz Yisrael was far out of their sight. They didn't deal mainly with the laws of Eretz Yisrael. And so when you come to Seder Zra'im, which deals with all the agricultural laws, there are 10 or 11 Masechtas in Seder Zra'im. There's only one that has a Babylonian Talmud, and that's Maseches Brachos, which really isn't part of Zra'im. It's kind of like the precursor. But the Masechtas of Truma and Meiser, they're not going to deal with in Bavel because since they weren't keeping those laws, they focused more. Now, many of those laws are mentioned throughout the whole Talmud, but it wasn't a focus. So the same thing happens. Seder Moed is a huge focus, even in Bavel, because Shabbos is Shabbos, and Erev is Erev, and Rosh Hashanah is Rosh. You still have to blow a shofar and shake a lulav in Bavel. But when it comes to Maseches Shkalim, there's only a Talmud Yerushalmi, because they weren't collecting the Machzitz HaShekel anymore. It happens to be that because Seder Moed is studied in its entirety, so when it comes to the Daf Yomi, I believe they do learn Shkalim, but they have to learn the Yerushalmi. They can't learn the Bavli because it doesn't exist. But most of the Daf Yomi cycle goes with the Bavli. So there in Shkalim, it discusses this idea, this pasuk. What does it mean that the Kohanim took the money? It doesn't make any sense. So what does it mean? It means that if let's say I lived in a nice faraway city, I lived in Be'er Sheva. And in Be'er Sheva, I realized I'm chayav a chatas. Let's say I inadvertently broke Shabbos. I didn't remember that it was Shabbos, or I didn't remember that writing was usher on Shabbos, and I wrote on Shabbos, so I violated Shabbos, b'shogeg, so I have to go ahead and bring a carbon chatas. So now that I'm bringing a carbon chatas, I'm far away. I'm in Be'er Sheva. So I think carbon chatas costs 1,000 shekels. So I take 1,000 shekel and I say, this money is for my carbon chatas. So now I come up to Yerushalayim, and I didn't know this, but there's a sale on animals. So all the cows that I would buy for a carbon chatas are $800. So now I'm stuck. I have $200 that I consecrated. It's holy money. Can't take it back. If I use this money, it's a violation of stealing from Hekdesh, which is an Isser called Me'ila, stealing from God. So what they do with the extra funds? So what they did is that Yoyada, who was the Kohen Gadol, he instituted that they would have they would take this money and put it into a fund that bought extra karbanos that would be brought as a carbon ola. Carbon ola is fully consumed; the actual sacrifice is fully consumed on the mizbeach, except one part, the hide of the animal, is not. And who gets the hide? The Kohanim. That's always the case. When it comes to the carbon ola, the hide is not burnt on the mizbeach, and the Kohanim got the Kohanim received the hide. So says the Talmud Yerushalmi, Kesef Asham, the Kesef Chatos, Lo Yuva Beis Hashem, La Kohanim Yiyu. That's what it meant. It meant that there were some extra things that came off of people who brought karbanos, namely the hides of these extra karbanos brought from the extra funds, and that's what the Kohanim got a chance to go ahead and keep. And the Radak here cites this Talmud Yerushalmi. This ends the good part of the career of Yoash as king. It also ends the Haftorah for which Parsha. It makes sense now that I've mentioned it so many times, but it's this section that's chosen as the Haftorah for Parshas Shkalim. When we have the Dalet Parshios, both Ashkenazim and Sfardim take selections from these Psukim because it talks about the Shekel, it talks about the Machzitz, it talks about the Kesef Over, which was the Machzitz HaShekel, and it talks about in general the idea of restoring, you know, using the funds to upkeep of Beis HaMikdash and Karbanos, which is what the Parsha Shkalim is all about. When we pick up next time, we'll go ahead and we'll handle the downfall of Yoash, which is heavily discussed in Divrei Hayamim, and also we'll actually see that the events are very much a part of our experience every year on Tisha B'Av and the kinos of Tisha B'Av. We'll stop here.